So we're going to recap. Haman has been elevated. The king makes him second in command. And everyone around the king's palace is supposed to bow to Haman. Mordechai refuses to bow. And Haman gets very upset at Mordechai. We stress Haman when we say Ala Nisim. Right? Bimei, Mordechai ve'Esther. Who do we say Bikesh Lahargam? Haman. And the whole Megillah stresses Haman. Our sole enemy is Haman. And Rav Hirsch writes in his Pirush on the Ala Nisim, he says, sometimes all you need is one catalyst. One person to get a whole program going, to get a whole positive thing going, or a whole negative thing going. More often than not, it's one terribly negative person. And that's what we see over here, that if only Haman is bumped off, then the solution to the problem isn't so far off. So Haman comes to Ahasuerus and tells him there's a nation that's scattered, mifurad, they're divided from the nations, they don't marry into us, and they're all over. You're the one who could bring around the final solution to wipe them out. The Bechon Medinot Malchutecha, they're in your kingdom, this problematic nation. The Iman HaMelech Tov, if it makes sense to you, my advice to you, as second in command, is Yikatev La'obdam, should be written to get rid of them. He doesn't say overtly to kill them, La'ashmid, La'og, U'la'bed. He doesn't tell Ahasuerus that. And Ahasuerus doesn't even hear what nation it is. Ahasuerus says, here's my ring, you're my top advisor. If that's what makes sense to you, do what makes sense to you. You don't even have to pay me. Hakesef natun lach. It's as though you paid me and I'm giving you the money back. So Haman is given the warrant to go ahead and do it. Now, we discussed that Lashmid Shmad is from the mitzvos. La'arog is to kill physically. La'bid is to burn the bodies, to leave no remembrance. And Shlalam Lavos, take their wealth. Haman says, the first day, B'yom Echad, on day one, on the 13th of Adar, kill everyone. After that, take their wealth. Haman wants the people focused on killing, not to take time to take their wealth. So Haman writes out the decree, and we discussed that Haman originally sends a decree, everyone should be ready for this day. Only to the leaders, to the officers, to the governors of the towns, does he write the full version of the decree. He tells them on that day, we're going to kill the Jews. He doesn't want the Jews to find out, because he's worried that they'll get their politicians moving to annul the decree. And what happens is that these governors who had friends who were Jews, they let them know what was happening, and the Jews gather in prayer and fast. The king rushes out the horsemen. He doesn't bother looking at the decree. Haman brings the horsemen before the king, and he tells him, rush, Haman told you to do something, get a move on. So the horsemen are rushing, and this is part of the miracle, that there's still going to be an opportunity for the second decrees to come out. That's going to be two series of decrees, as we will see. And the city of Shushan was Navocha. They were confused. What does he want? Mordechai sends Esther, as we discussed last time. And Esther tells Mordechai, you know, the king hasn't invited me in 30 days. So chances are he's going to invite me pretty soon. He's going to miss me. So why should I go now and risk everything? If I go now, I could get the king all upset. For 30 days he hasn't seen me. Eventually he's going to miss me. In a day or two or three, eventually he'll call me in. So why do you want me to go against the known law? If I do that, that's you know, going to cause him to be incensed. It's not like it's some far out law. It's a known law. No one walks in before the king without an invitation. If I walk in, it might have the opposite effect. And Mordechai tells Esther that that's wrong. You have to go. Don't think that the halacha is, you don't, we have halacha. If a person sees someone else is about to sin a great sin, and he could save them by doing a minor sin, so we don't tell him, you do the minor sin to save him from the great sin. We don't say that. So Mordechai tells Esther, don't think you're in a situation where if you remain silent, you're okay. So why am I telling you to endanger your own life to save the Jewish people's life? You might think, wait a second, right now I'm not in danger. If I stay and don't move, I'm not in danger, I'm safe, I'm the queen. So halachically, by what right do I endanger my life for the safek potential maybe saving other people's lives? Mordechai tells her, you're wrong. Your life is in danger. Don't think that you're okay. Your life is in danger, your whole family's life is in danger, and ultimately you have no guarantee in the king's palace that you're going to be safe from this decree. So you're in danger like the others, and you must go and risk your life. even though it's going against the laws, you have to move now. So Esther tells Mordechai, fine, but gather the people of Shushan, and for 3 days, fast and pray over me. You can't gather all of the Jews, but at least the people in the capital. And then I'll go to the king against my will. And Mordechai declares a fast day on Pesach, that night of Pesach. Mordechai doesn't eat his matzah, doesn't eat his maror. He doesn't have a seder with any food. It was a time when everyone was in danger, and Mordechai didn't have a choice. At the end of the day, she was queen. And Chazal say that Mordechai told Esther, but tonight it's Pesach. And Esther told Mordechai, if there will be no Jews, there will never again be a Pesach. So sometimes we say, Chalel Shabbat Achat, we tell a person, desecrate one Shabbos in order to save a Jew's life, so that that Jew will ultimately save many Shabbatot. If you save his life, that's another person who's keeping many Shabbatot. We say, better desecrate one Shabbos to save a Jew's life, and ultimately he'll keep many Shabbatot. By the same token, Esther tells Mordechai, you know, if we don't do this now, then who knows if there'll be a Jewish people next year to keep Pesach. And she's the queen, so Mordechai listens to her. On the third day, Esther gets dressed with kingship, with royalty. She is dressed with Ruach HaKodesh. Ruach HaKodesh rests on a person when they've conquered their physical and they are as spiritual as can be. And that's the state Esther was in. She had been fasting for 3 days and she was going to do something only because the halacha told her to do it. She had no interest. And Hashem made a miracle that the king was sitting al kisei malchuto on his throne. Ordinarily, the king sat on his throne when he sat for justice. When he used to judge the people, he'd sit on his throne. Here, the king was sitting on his throne, bevet hamalchut, in his own house. For some reason, he had the throne moved, and Hashem wanted him sitting exactly in his position where when Esther approaches the doorway, he'll see her. And that's what happens. So Ahasuerus looks up, and he sees Esther nochach petach habayit, opposite the entrance to the home. And he sees Esther, and Chazal tell us three angels accompanied Esther at that time. One to catch his attention, one to make her find favor in his eyes, and one to extend the scepter that it should touch her. And he extends the scepter, and Esther touches the scepter, and the king asks her, Malach Esther Amalka, what's wrong with you? Esther's walking in all faint. She's been fasting for 3 days. And the king says, what do you need? What's going on here? Esther could hardly hold her head up. And she was also nervous. She knew that at that moment she might get killed. So she's walking in, filled with trepidation and fear against the law. And he realizes that she risked her life to come in now, because technically she could have died. She could have been killed. The way the law stood, unless he extended his scepter, she was a dead woman when she entered that room. So Ahasuerus sees it and he says, must be you want something. Tell me, what do you want? What's wrong? Is someone bothering you? Why you seem faint. Umava kashatech. And what's your request? Up to half the kingdom I'll give you. Maybe you need something for other people. Maba kashatech. What's your request on behalf of others? And Esther says, I need to ask of you a big favor, and I can't ask you yet. Maybe you won't agree. So do me a favor. Come to a party that I'll make tonight. I'll make a party. I've prepared a party. And you and Haman come. So Ahasuerus tells his officers, rush Haman over here. Poor Esther, she's suffering. We got to get to this party quickly, see what she wants. So they rush Haman over. And at the party, Ahasuerus asks Esther, Mashela Seich, what do you want? Is it something you personally need? Umava kashatech, or is it something you need for others? What do you want? Up to half the kingdom I'll give over to you. And Esther says, I'll ask you, She'elati, my request for myself, u'bakashati, and for others, imatzati chen b'enei ha'melech, if I find favor in your eyes, v'ima l'melech tov, and if it's good before the king to do my request, so then I want the king and Haman to come tomorrow for the party I will make them. This time, she says, I'm making a party for both of you. And here, she is really equating Haman with Ahasuerus. Why does she push off one more day? The Gemara in Megillah tells us that the Tanaim and Amoraim had a discussion. What was Esther thinking when she made this party with Haman and Achashverosh? One opinion says she wanted Haman to be confident that everything's okay. One opinion says she wanted the Jews to be nervous, to pray. They shouldn't think, oh, we have a sister who's the queen, everything will be okay. She said, let's make another party. Why is she doing this? Why is she making a second party? And why is she inviting Haman to the party altogether? The third opinion says she wanted Haman present, so that if the king gets upset, right away he could punish him. Haman wouldn't have time to get other people to ask the king, and Achashverosh wouldn't have a chance to change his mind, because Achashverosh was hafachpach. He would constantly change his mind. One opinion says that she thought, if I tell the king I'm making a party for you and Haman, the king is going to think, what's going on between Haman and Esther? She invites me to an affair, to a party, and we have to have Haman there? That's not intimacy. Why is Haman there? And then the king will think, maybe she and Haman, something's going on between them, and the king will kill both of them. She was willing to give up her life with Haman, that the king should suspect maybe there's something going on between her and Haman. And the Gemara records that one of the Amoraim met up with Elio, and he asked Elio, tell me, what was Esther thinking, Elio? You know. And Elio said she thought all of the above. All of the opinions were part of her thoughts. She was thinking, maybe this and maybe that, maybe that. Those are all good reasons why Esther did it, and they were all up Esther's sleeve when she made the party. So now, at the end of the first party, Esther words it. She says, I want to make a party for both of you tomorrow. Now she's even telling Achashverosh, this, it's not that it's a party for you and I want Haman present, it's both of your party tomorrow. And Esther was concerned, does God approve of what I'm doing? People think that if a person is a tzaddik, then he always knows that God approves of what he's doing. Chazal say, even as Esther was approaching Achashverosh's room, she said, Hatzila mecherev nafshi miyad kelev yechidati, save me from this dog. And she just finished saying that, and the Shekhinah left her. So Esther said, Hashem, are you upset that I called him a dog? So I'll call him a lion, but save him. And then she continues the Perek Tehillim and she refers to him as a lion. Tzaddikim, as great as they are, it's not like they have God in their back pocket, so to speak. They also wonder, does Hashem approve of what I'm doing? They try their best to do what's right, but no one gives a person a guarantee in this world that he'll get it right. A person always has to wonder, am I really on the mark? So Esther says, let's take one more day before I pose the request. Maybe Hashem will give me a sign that He approves of what I'm doing. And Esther was right. As we know, that night Achashverosh calls in Haman, and Haman has to lead Mordechai around town, and she gets a sign that Hashem approves. So Esther says, I want to make a party for both of you tomorrow. And in doing this, she also causes Haman to be more relaxed. Haman now assumes, Esther likes me too. I'm on really good footing now. And Haman walks out of the party without a care in the world. He is sameach. He has his own happiness. V'tov lev. He's carefree. He has no worries. Until now, he had one concern. He knew that Esther had a special place for Mordechai. She had elevated him within the kingdom. And now, Haman sees that Esther likes him more than Mordechai. She invited only him to the party. Mordechai wasn't even invited. And then Haman sees Mordechai sitting by the king's gates. And Haman walks by. And Mordechai doesn't even stand up in his honor. Mordechai doesn't budge. And when he sees that, he sees that Mordechai has no respect for him. Now here Haman has made this whole decree to wipe out all of the Jewish people, because he's upset at Mordechai. And even after he's made this decree, Mordechai doesn't budge. And now his ego has been elevated even more, because now he feels even the queen thinks I'm tops. So he's not scared of Mordechai anymore. He figures, you see, Esther likes me more than him. She invited me to the party. And even so, he sees that Mordechai doesn't budge. So Haman gets filled with anger, and he comes home, and when a person is at the top of the world, is extremely happy, and suddenly something comes and pains him, so going from one extreme to the other could knock a person out. So Haman has to comfort himself. He calls in his friends and his children and his wife and his advisors, and he starts showing off his wealth. He has to appease himself that really he is an important person. And on top of all this, he shows his wealth in money. He shows his honor that he's second in command. He says, "V'chol ze einenu shove li." All of this is worthless to me. Every time I see Mordechai sitting at the king's gates, I feel like all of this is worthless. And we once had a class. It's a class that I heard online. I don't remember who gave it. Maybe on 613.org, I don't remember. But I don't remember who was the rabbi. He pointed out that this pasuk teaches us a very, very important lesson about how bad a person can be. What situation was Haman in? Haman was second in command. He was, in his eyes, the most loved by the queen after the king. And even Mordechai the Jew was about to be wiped off the map. The decree was already written that a year from now all the Jews would be killed. So what's the issue? Right now Mordechai isn't giving him honor. And that outdoes all the wealth that Haman has. Haman was extraordinarily wealthy. According to the smallest opinion, meaning there are different opinions in Chazal, how many kids he had. The least he had was 30 kids. So he's got a huge family, he's got it made, and he says, but all of this is worthless to me. He had 30 sons. 10 were killed, 10 were hung, and 10 were impoverished at the end of the story. That's why we have rabbis who are descendants of Haman. Descendants of Haman. Okay. Yeah. So Zeresh, his wife, who we know she wore the pants in the house, that's why he originally asked for the decree that the wife has to listen to her husband, because his wife used to boss him around. And all his friends tell him, make a huge tree, 50 amas high, that's 100 feet high. They tell him, you hang him in a way that wherever you go, you'll be able to look up and see his body hung, and that'll always make you happy. So make him hung on a huge tree, meaning they planned on leaving the body hanging up there. And this way, when you come to the feast, even as you're sitting at the feast, anytime things aren't looking so good, you can just look up at that tree and see Mordechai hanging, and you'll be happy. From wherever you go in the city, you'll be able to see it. 50 amos high, you guys know what that is, that's 100 feet. It's about the height of this building. That's tremendously high, especially in those days. And then you'll be happy. So that's the advice they give him. Now, this was also one of the ways God prepared things for the miracle of Purim, so that when Esther and Haman and Ahasuerus are at the meal the next night, and Ahasuerus gets upset at Haman, so Harvona tells the king, "Gam hine yaetz, there's the tree. Turn around, Ahasuerus. You see that tree shooting up to the sky? You see that? That hanging platform that's 50 amos high, you could see it from all over town. You see that? He was planning on hanging Mordechai on that. And Ahasuerus from the feast can turn around and see it. And then Ahasuerus says, Tluhu alav, hang him on it. But had it not been so high, then they would have said, theoretically, you know, there is this tree, he's planning on hanging Mordechai on. It's not the same thing as when you see it and when you hear it. A picture's worth 1,000 words. So Haman goes to prepare the tree. And our sages say that when he prepared the tree, he was really preparing the tree for his own hanging. And the importance of this is that when it comes to the Jewish people, we say in heaven there was a decree they should be annihilated. And then the decree was overturned in heaven as well when we did tshuva. But about Mordechai, there was never a decree he should be hung. It's not that the tree was built and in heaven they said, yeah, Mordechai is going to get hung, and then it was overturned the next day. Even as Haman built the tree in heaven, the idea was he's building it for himself. Zeresh, his wife, tells him, Uva boker imor lamelech, and early in the morning, usually you show up late, you're the most important of the king's advisors, so you show up latest, but tomorrow you go early in the morning, before anyone else comes in, and then you'll be alone with the king, and you tell him the itlut Mordechai alav, they'll hang Mordechai in that tree, and because you'll be the only one there, there'll be no advisors to contradict you, no buddies of Mordechai will be around, and then the king will approve, you hang him, uvo im ha-melech el ha-mishteh sameach, and you'll come to the feast happy. Haman says that's a great idea, and he himself goes to prepare the tree. As we know, ha-sin'ah mekalkelet et ha-shura. Great love or great hatred cause a person to go out of order. He doesn't even think of asking his servants to do things. He does them himself. Just like Bilam, when he's going to curse the Jewish people, he saddles his own donkey. He doesn't think of asking his slaves to do it. He saddles. He prepares his own donkey for the ride. Usually he'd ask his servants to do it. But he hated the Jewish people so much, he prepared it himself. Avram, when Hashem tells him to take his son Yitzhak to the Akedah, out of his great love for Hashem, he himself prepares the donkey to go and take Yitzhak. Great love causes a person to do things out of order, and great hatred also causes a person to do things out of order. Balayla hahu nadida shenat ha-melech. That night, the king couldn't sleep. He thinks, and he says to himself, Esther risked her life to come to me today. And then she says, I want you, the king, and Haman to come to a party. Must be something's bothering her. And it can't be that something in the palace is bothering her, because she's here, she has everything she needs. What could be better for her? Must be she needs something for someone else. What could it be that Esther wants? And why did she have Haman there? Must be she thinks that Haman will also ask me for this favor, and together they'll get what she's asking for. So Ahasuerus says to himself, what could it be that Esther wants? Well, she doesn't have a nation. She doesn't know what people she comes from. She keeps telling me that Mordechai took her in and brought her up as an orphan, but she doesn't know what nation she's from. So if Mordechai brought her up and she doesn't know what nation she's from, she cannot be asking me for a favor on behalf of a nation, because she doesn't know what nation she's from. Must be she's asking for a favor on behalf of Mordechai. Well, what could she be asking for Mordechai? Maybe Haman loves Mordechai too. They're both my officers. So he's thinking to himself, what could it be? Bring me the history books. I want to review what's been happening here. I want to be there to it. I want to know if it's something that's such a big request on behalf of Mordechai, I want to be prepared. And I want to have a claim to tell her, Esther, you can't ask me for that. It must be she's going to ask me something way too big. If she needs Haman there and she's making a party and she risks her life.
He just says his sleep was disturbed.
Right?
So how do they darshan?
That's a different class.
Okay, never mind.
I just have to tell you, we're working in Pshat. Chazal have other midrashim. In other years, we worked with the midrashim. This year, we're going closer to Pshat. We're going primarily with the Gra's explanation of Pshat. And a little bit of Chazal dabbled in around. But what we're doing now is Pshat. Because there's a whole machlokas in Chazal. Was Ahasuerus a good guy or a bad guy? Stupid or smart? We're going with this Pshat. So Ahasuerus is tossing and turning and he says to himself, I want to be prepared. Esther has something up her sleeve and it must be big if she's preparing me like this and she's not telling me what it is. Let me see. And then he comes to the conclusion it must be about Mordechai. So he says, bring me the books. I want to see what happened with Mordechai that she's going to have a claim. You owe him something. She wouldn't just ask me to do him a favor. It must be there's room for a claim that I owe him something. So he looks over his books and he sees, hey, Mordechai saved my life. She has validity. She could ask me for something. So he says, what did we ever do to give him honor or give him money? Did we ever pay him back for it? And they tell him no. Now Chazal tell us that the one who was reading the book before Ahasuerus was Haman's own son. And every time he tried flipping the pages to turn away from the story of Mordechai, and Hashem sent Gavriel, the angel, he kept flipping the page back. Hashem made it that Ahasuerus couldn't fall asleep that night. And Haman's own son was called in to read. The king says, I'm bored, let me read. According to one shot in Chazal, he says, maybe there's a plot brewing against me. If Esther is so buddy-buddy with Haman, maybe they're thinking of bumping me off. Let me see, why isn't anyone telling me about a relationship that's forming between Haman and Esther? For 30 days I haven't seen my Esther. Who knows what's been happening between her and Haman? No one's told me anything. Maybe in the past someone saved my life and I didn't pay him back properly. Bring me the history books. I want to see what's happened in history. Who saved my life? Did I ever give him honor? Maybe that's why no one's thinking of helping me out. So they bring the history books, and Haman's own son starts reading, and he flips open the pages, and it opens to the page of Mordechai saving his life. So he turns to another page, and the Malach comes and turns it back, and he turns again and turns back. So Achashverosh says, stop flipping the pages, read where you're at. So he starts reading, Vayimatze Katuv, it was found written. He didn't even mean for that to be what he was reading. But he had no choice, that Mordechai saved the king's life. So the king asks him, would we ever pay Mordechai back for saving my life? So the guy has no choice, he says nothing. Haman has been busy all night preparing his post to hang Mordechai on, and now he's outside the king's palace. He wants to be in first. So Achashverosh says, who's out there? I hear someone out there. They tell him, it's Haman. Now, according to the pshat we began with, Achashverosh was thinking, I want to surprise Esther. By the time I come to the party, when she'll ask me to honor Mordechai, I'll tell her I've already honored him. So who's out there? They tell him it's Haman. And the king says, call him in. Achashverosh thinks Haman must be on his way here to ask me how to honor Mordechai. He and Esther are in on the same plot. They're both trying to convince me to honor Mordechai. So let's see what he has to say. So Haman comes in, and the king tells him, what should I do to honor a person who I want to honor? Now, Achashverosh thinks that Haman is going to assume this is about Mordechai, because Achashverosh thinks Haman and Esther are on the same side. They're both trying to honor Mordechai. Now, Hashem caused Achashverosh to word it. He says, a person I want to honor. He doesn't tell him a person who I want to give money to, because technically Haman was the wealthiest person in the kingdom after Achashverosh. And if he would have said, I want to give him money, Haman would have understood it wasn't about himself. Because he had so much money, it would be ridiculous for the king to add on to his money. So Hashem caused Achashverosh to word it, what do I do with the person that I want to honor? And Haman thinks to himself, gee, who would the king want to honor? Must be me. So Haman says, you want to honor a person? Here's what you do. You give him royal clothing. You give him the royal horse. You give him on that horse, you put the crown that the king always rides around with, the horse wearing that crown. And send him all around Shushan with people proclaiming, with the servant proclaiming, this is what's done to the king, to the person the king wants to honor. Now going with Chazal's understanding that Achashverosh was worried there's a coup brewing between Haman and Esther. So Chazal say, Achashverosh understood Haman thought this was all about himself. So Achashverosh realizes, what did this guy just say? He says, give me the royal clothing, give me the royal horse, give me the royal crown, ride me around town and let them declare, this is what I want, this is what the king wants done to someone who the king wants to honor. So the king realizes, hey, this guy has no shame. He wants to take the throne when I'm still around. Yeah.
Okay, but Mordechai's a tzaddik, you're not supposed to take honor upon yourself.
He didn't take it, the king gave it. What's he going to say? No. He didn't take it, the king gave it. So, according to the pshat we were working with, Pashut pshat, that Haman thinks this is all about himself. Achashverosh thinks that Haman thinks this is all about Mordechai. So Achashverosh tells Haman, quick, you do everything you just said. Don't give it to anyone else. I want it done right away so that we could come quickly to the feast with Esther. Achashverosh thinks, you know, Haman came here. He also wanted me to honor Mordechai. That's what he wants. So it's in his interest too. We'll get this done as quickly as possible. And then I'll be able to tell Esther, here, Esther, you wanted me to do something for Mordechai? I did it. And don't leave anything out. Chazal say that Achashverosh here was giving a big smack in the face to Haman. Haman says, take one of your officers, have them walk around and proclaim that Mordechai is this person is the important person in town. What does Achashverosh tell him? You do it. Well, think about it. The second in command, the vice president, is told to take the horse, going around town yelling, this is what's done to the person the king wants to honor. So Haman is pretty bushed out. Haman has no choice. He takes the garments, he takes the horse, and he goes and dresses Mordechai. And we discussed the medrash that Esther had all the barber shops and bathhouses closed that day in honor of the ride for Mordechai. So Haman comes to Mordechai. Mordechai says, I haven't bathed in days. I haven't taken a haircut in a while. Yeah. So Haman says, but everything's closed. And Mordechai says, fine, you used to be a barber. You take care of me. So Haman takes care. He sets up the fire and he heats up the bathhouse and he gives Mordechai a bath. And then he gives him a haircut. And then Mordechai has to climb up on the horse. And Mordechai says, I'm weak. I've been fasting 3 days. So Haman bends over, and as he's climbing up, Mordechai takes a really good step on Haman. So Haman tells him, "Bin follow ivcha al tismach." When your enemy is down, the pasuk says, "Don't be happy." Mordechai tells him, "That's a Jewish enemy. It's not talking about you. You're Amalek." So Haman's taking him all around town, and at the end of the day, Haman rushes home. He's embarrassed. Everyone's seen him rushing all, walking all around town, declaring, "This is what's done to the person the king wants to honor." He's supposed to be the second in command, and he's been spending his day being the barber, being in charge of the bathhouse. And he comes home to his wife and all his friends, and he tells them what happened. His friends assume that what happened was that Haman came and said to Achashverosh, why don't you hang Mordechai? And Achashverosh said, hang him? You kidding? You go take him around town and declare he's my favorite. So all his friends are thinking, boy, this is Haman's last day. Must be that Mordechai is now going to be second in command. And they assume that that was what the king had just done. He told Haman, you ride Mordechai around town, and you declare that this is what's done to the person the king wants to honor. So Haman comes home, and he says, et kol asher karau, the coincidence that happened. Haman says to his friends, guys, it's not normal. Look at what the coincidence was. Just last night, the king happened to bump into that record that he has to honor Mordechai, and I walked in and he asked me what to do, and he thought I was on Mordechai's side, so I said this whole list of things to do. So the king says, okay, you love Mordechai just like me, go, you take care of it. Haman says it's all a coincidence. So his wise men and Zeresh, his wife, tell him, no, don't you assume it's a coincidence. If Mordechai is a Jew, so then the Jews have no mazel, it doesn't go by the stars. If this is what happened to you, then the Jews either shoot up to the sky or go down to the earth. God declared that the Jews are either this way or that way. They're not run by the stars like the nations. If they're doing God's will, they shoot up to the stars. If they're not doing His will, He knocks them down to the earth. But they're never going to be like us, that they're judged by the constellations and the mazel. So you won't succeed. And Haman insists. He says, that's not true. It's a coincidence. It happens to be that this is what happened. The conversation is in full force, and his wise men might have convinced him. So Hashem has Achashverosh's officers come knock on the door, and they tell Haman, come quick. You got to come to the king's gates. It's time for the party. Now, Haman's wise men were telling him, listen here, Haman, you're risking your life if you leave that post standing. The king just told you that he loves Mordechai more. You don't know, maybe you're going to be bumped down. Don't leave that post standing. Haman says, no, it was a coincidence. It'll pass. Don't worry, I know politics. Now, had the conversation continued, they might have convinced him to take down the post. Hashem wanted the post standing, because in an hour, Haman's going to be hanging on that. So Hashem has the king's officers come quickly, they knock on the door, they say, Haman, time to go. Now we know the Medrash, right? We discussed the Medrash, that Haman had a daughter, was a little bit crazy. Yeah, we mentioned this last a few times ago. Yeah, she was in the house, she hears everyone's, there's a party outside, she asks what's going on outside. They tell her, outside, it's Haman and Mordechai with a horse. So she says, Haman and Mordechai, great. She goes to the window. She sees two figures down below. She figures, well, who's the one that's being honored? Must be my dad. Who's the one that's leading the horse? Must be Mordechai. My dad's the second in command. He wouldn't be the one who's leading the horse. So she takes all the dung they had in the house, all the feces. She dumps it on the guy leading the horse. Haman is walking around town and he has all the dung full on him. He looks up and lets out a roar. His daughter sees that it's her father she just poured it all on to. So she jumps out the window and commits suicide. And that's why Haman comes home, avel, in mourning. He just lost his daughter. V'chafui rosh. And his head is totally wrapped. According to one understanding is he had his face wrapped because the king was upset at him. Well, according to the understanding that the king understood that Haman was in it all for himself, that Haman's whole description was, give me the honor as though I was king. So the king was very upset. Achashverosh and Haman come to the party. And now Esther breaks her fast and she's going to eat and drink with him. And again, the king asked Esther, what do you want for yourself? Or who are you asking? On behalf of whom are you asking? Whatever you want, I'll do. And Esther says, if it is your will and if I find favor. Those are the two things. A person has to have will, and the one who's asking should find favor in their eyes. Then my request is, Sheilati, my personal request is, for my own life. And Bakashati, my request for others, is on my nation. Because me and my nation have been sold over. Technically, Haman wanted to buy the rights to wipe them out. Achashverosh told him, you could keep the money. But technically, we were sold. And if we would have been sold as slaves, so then that would have been okay. She says, Im matzati chen, if I found favor in your eyes, have compassion on me. So even if we would have been sold as slaves, I'd want you to save us. That's im matzati chen. Ve'im al ha-melech tov, and if it's good before you, so save us. Ki en atzar shove benezek ha-melech. It's not worth it, the damage that's going to happen to the king by this decree. So Achashverosh gets very upset. Let's remember, according to this pshat, Achashverosh didn't even know who he was signing over when he gave Haman the rights. Haman said, there is this nation that's all scattered. There's this nation that's harmful to your kingship. And Achashverosh said, fine, here, I trust you. So now when Esther tells him, you know, me and my nation have been sold over to destruction, Achashverosh doesn't yet know what she's talking about. So Achashverosh says, Mi hu ze ve'eze hu? Who are we talking about? Who is it that thinks he could kill my queen? And who is it that thinks he'll destroy your nation? Now, Achashverosh is a little bit in a quandary. He says, she's been telling me all along she doesn't know who her nation is. So who is it that wants to kill out her nation? What nation is that? Yeah.
But why does she say, if I've been sold as slaves and maidservants, I will keep her quiet. The adversary is not worth the king's damage. So she's saying Haman's not worth fighting against him or something? Who's the adversary? Huh? Have we been sold as slaves and maidservants, I will keep quiet. The adversary is not worthy of the king's damage.
She's saying the Hatzar, it's not worth it, the king's damage. It wouldn't be worth it for me to trouble you if we were only sold as slaves. If we were only sold as slaves, I wouldn't trouble you with all this.
Why does she say the adversary isn't worthy? What's that about?
It's not worthy of troubling you. I wouldn't have troubled you if it were only a question of being sold as slaves. Esther is standing before the king, and he asked her, who is it that thinks to kill you and ends up and kill your people? And Esther says, Ish tzar v'oyev, Haman hara hazeh. It's an enemy, it's a terrible person, this terrible Haman. Chazal say that as she said this, she was pointing to Achashverosh, Ish tzar v'oyev, it's you. And then an angel came and pushed her finger towards Haman, and she said, Haman araz. What does that mean? She was pointing towards Achashverosh. So when tzaddikim spoke before the king, they used to focus their mind on Hashem. Most people, when they speak before a king, so their thoughts are, how will I make him happy? How will I say what's right, do what's right? Tzaddikim, when they're standing before the king, they know that the king's mind and heart are in the hands of Hashem, and they have a responsibility as a representative of Hashem to say the correct things. So their mind is completely connected to their Creator. So Esther's mind is with Hashem. And technically, what she was saying before Hashem and what Hashem recognized was that the real enemy, the problematic person here was Achashverosh, not only Haman. So when she says, Ish tzar v'oyev, she's pointing to Achashverosh, because that's where her thoughts are. And Hashem knows that in order for this to work, she has to work with Achashverosh, as bad as he is. So she ends up, Hashem sends a malach for her to end up pointing at Haman, and she says, Haman hara hazeh. And Haman is taken by surprise. Haman has a problem. If Achashverosh weren't there, He could tell Esther, you know, I didn't know it was your nation, I'm sorry. But when Ahasuerus is there, he cannot say that, because he had made this great claim to Ahasuerus, saying they're a terrible nation. They're a problem to leave them around. You have to wipe them off the planet. That you can make the final solution. No one else can bump off this nation like you. They're all in your kingdom and they're a problem to humanity. You have to get rid of them. So he can't say that in front of Ahasuerus. What's he going to say? I didn't know it was your nation, but he made this great claim that you really have to kill out this nation. If Esther weren't there, if it were just Ahasuerus, he could tell him, you know, with all due respect to the queen, but this is really a terrible nation. You do have to kill them. But now that they're both standing there, Ahasuerus and Esther, what can he say? He can't stand in front of the queen and say, with all due respect to the queen, they're a terrible nation. And he can't stand in front of Ahasuerus and start telling Esther, you know, I'm sorry, I didn't know it was your nation. So Haman is silent. He's standing there all scared. He doesn't know what to say. Ahasuerus gets upset and he walks out into his beloved garden to calm down. He goes out into the garden and he sees people hacking down his favorite trees. He asks them, what's going on here? They tell him, Haman sent us here. Haman told us to come hack down the trees. Chazal say that Hashem sent angels to take on human form and to get Ahasuerus more riled up. So Ahasuerus left the party to calm down. He goes out into his favorite courtyard to walk among his favorite trees and he sees them being cut down. And Haman did not send these people to cut down the trees. God sent these angels to look like they were sent by Haman. They said, we're sent by Haman. So now Ahasuerus walks back into the party. He's more upset than he was when he walked out. Now, the question we have to ask is, why is it that God sometimes plays games, so to speak, tricks with people like this, with Haman or with Paro or with Lavan, when Yaakov's watching his sheep? So Hashem makes the trick so that Yaakov will end up victorious. So we say in Tehillim, Ki Yashar Hashem, Tzuri V'lo Avlat Abo. Hashem is straight, He is my rock, and there is nothing unfair about Him. Hashem is Yashar. Hashem is straight. So why do we have to add, there is nothing unfair about Him? Even when Hashem does things that are tricks, Hashem is just paying back people for the tricks they did. It's all part of Hashem being Yashar, Hashem being straight. Haman did all this trickery, even conned Ahasuerus into signing this death warrant over the Jewish people. So Hashem said, okay, if you're playing with tricks, the way to be straight with you is to play with tricks against you as well. And Haman, now that Ahasuerus walks out to the garden, so Haman stands up to beg for his life. Now, Haman is totally floored, so he stumbles and he's scared for his life. Ahasuerus sees him stumbling towards Esther. He thinks he's ready to kill her. So Ahasuerus says, well, you want to kill her when I'm still around?
I didn't think he was killer. I heard other things also.
Okay. Right. So Haman now has no answer. What's he going to say? And as he's standing there, Harvona, one of the king's officers, he was there. He was one of those that were plotting how to kill Mordechai. So he knew exactly what was in the plan. And he tells the king, he realizes now it's time to switch sides. So he tells Ahasuerus, and there's the tree that Haman prepared for Mordechai, Asher diber tov al ha-melech, that spoke good about the king. So the king says, oh, hang him. Now Ahasuerus turned around and saw that huge post that Haman prepared. It was visible from all of Shushan, just as Haman had planned. So the king says, that? Okay, hang him on it. Now the way Harvona worded it, Hashem made it that he would word it in a way that it sounded a little different than he meant. Harvona says, there's the tree that Haman made for Mordechai, Asher diber tov al ha-melech. The king understood that to mean that as Haman was preparing the post, Haman said, you know, this tree would be better for the king. I wish I could hang him on it. Ahasuerus hears that. He says, what? So he said about me, hang him on it. That's not what Harvona meant. Harvona meant, Mordechai spoke good for the king. Asher diber tov al ha-melech, who said good for the king? Harvona meant Mordechai said good for the king. Ahasuerus thought he meant that Haman said, this tree is good for the king. I can't wait till I hang him on it. So Ahasuerus says, oh, that's just what I thought. Haman's plotting to kill me. So Ahasuerus says, hang him on it. And there's that, Jim, we're out of time. So.